Okay, with that, we'll take some questions. You need to start with a diverse range of goods and services, which could come from a single issuer. For example, if you had Walmart as an issuer, Walmart has all kinds of goods and services that they offer. So that kind of issuer would provide a sufficient range of goods and services. But if you had, let's say, the typical Let's system, maybe 150 or 200 members, and maybe you can get massage, maybe you can get home-baked bread, maybe you can get a few organic vegetables, maybe you can get your bicycle repaired, but that isn't a sufficient range. People often ask, how big does a system have to be in order to be sustainable? It's not just a matter of size. It's not just a matter of how many people are participating. It's also a matter of the range of, diversity of goods and services. Can I get my car repaired? Can I buy my groceries? Can I buy gasoline for my car? So you want to be able to include things that are of everyday use to people, things that they need, not just things that are convenient or luxuries. The economy of Oroville, in the 2 weeks that I've been here, I've gotten a little bit of insight, and I've had conversations with Olivier, and I'm beginning to get some sense of it. There seems to be quite a bit here. It doesn't seem to be sustainable or very much self-sufficient. No community is ever going to be totally self-sufficient, but it would be nice if you could provide at least a substantial percentage of your needs internally. Was there some point to your question? Well, I know of kibbutzes, and I visited one once briefly. Well, I don't know how the kibbutz compares to what I've described here. I think so, especially if you bring in merchants that are outside on the fringe. You can have a mutual credit clearing system that includes non-Oroville businesses. There's nothing wrong with that. Just get the ones that you trust, the ones that are producing things that you want. Include them in your circle. Or, I don't think mutual credit clearing is money. Mutual credit clearing is reciprocal exchange. I don't know what Mother thought money to be. Probably the only kind of money she ever considered or knew of was official money, with all of its inherent flaws and disadvantages. So, yes, I think if you can eliminate that kind of money from Oroville, fine. But I think you still need reciprocal exchange. And reciprocal exchange can be mediated in the way that I described. The reality, of course, is that there's lots of money in Oroville. You pay for the taxi every time you take a ride, and I have to put money in my account. I mean, it's still money, whether it's rupees or credits in the Oroville accounting system, it's still money. You know, I have to pay for my lodging and my food. And I know there is a core group in Oroville that has a maintenance. You have this Portus account that enables somewhat of a monastic kind of economy, but I don't think that's ever going to be the major part of Oroville. I don't think it can be. I think you have to have a reciprocal exchange system. You're building a city here, and the city has to include more than just the the monastic group. Okay, a currency is intended to be an exchange medium. Savings and investment, that's a different topic. That's a separate problem. Saving in a developed economy is actually a social process. You might have your savings in the form of a bank deposit, or a stock portfolio, or corporate or municipal bonds, or federal government bonds. These are all obligations. They're all promises. Nothing more. So that's what we call a financial asset. A currency is one type of claim. Those things are another type of claim. We use a currency as a circulating exchange medium to facilitate the trading process. We use those other things as a savings medium. Now, when you buy a corporate bond, what happens to that money? The corporation takes that money and spends it on building its factory, buying machinery, whatever it needs to produce its product. So that money gets spent. So you have a claim against the profits of that company when you have a bond or a share of stock. Well, that kind of thing works no matter what medium of exchange you have. If you have excess community credits, more than you need to spend at the moment, you need to invest those. So we're going to have a capital market in the community currency just as you have in the official currency. You can use your community currency to buy a bond, to lend money for me to open my business, just as if you were to lend me rupees. So the savings and investment function can operate pretty much the way it does in the conventional money system. Those with surplus allocate it to somebody else who's going to use it productively and pay you back later on. What works on the scale of a village, I'm not sure it can work on a scale of a city where you have much more intricate processes going on. But I do know that there are societies that have been self-sufficient for a long, long time. They've been pretty isolated from the outside world. And as soon as the outside world impinges on them, then the social fabric disintegrates. And the relationships among people that provided for reciprocity and the general welfare begin to break down. So I don't know what the answer is to that. Well, that's what we're trying to do, is to create a community barter system. But are you saying in the village they don't keep records? They don't keep track of who's getting what? Well, that's good. There's an area, I don't know if you were at my talk the other night, but I talked about interpersonal distance. When the interpersonal distance is small, you can function on the basis of informal arrangements where you don't have to keep track at all. You know, everybody has a sense of the balance in their relationships with one another. But when you get to dealing with strangers, people that you don't encounter all the time, you have to have some way of managing this reciprocity that's more formal. Other societies in other times have had some interesting ways of taking care of people. In the Bible, it talks about gleaning. when someone harvested their field, they were told to go through it only once, not go back and get the fringes or the leavings, but to leave those for the traveler and the widows and the orphans. I knew a little bit about Oroville before I came, but not very much. And, of course, you really can't know anything about a place until you're actually there. And even then, you only see little bits and pieces of it. This place takes in a wide area, and I've only seen a small portion of it. But I did have a tour of some of the production units, so I got to see at least some of your economic activity and some of your economic potential. And it seems like there's a tremendous economic potential here. You've got some very able people with good skills producing excellent products. And you could produce more, not only for export, but also for internal use. But I think you're really going to have to create some kind of a mutual credit exchange system, some form of reciprocal exchange, in order to maximize the benefit. You know, you had that presentation on entrepreneurship by Gunther. Yeah, and I thought he gave an excellent presentation and provided a lot of good input for what might be done by Orovillians in the way of entrepreneurship. If you want to be a relatively self-reliant community, you've got to be productive. And I think being productive, that is enhanced by some form of reciprocity. Yes, you can provide basic necessities for everybody once you're productive enough, but there should also be some measure of something extra for those who want to do the extra work and make the extra effort. But you also want to avoid wide disparities in wealth within the community, because I think that's destructive to community. Well, the prosperity is going to come from productivity. And I think if you allow people to reap the rewards of having taken the risk and put forth the effort, that'll increase the productivity. That's more than having just a mutual credit system. You have to have a system of rewards. If someone here wants to undertake an enterprise, let's say to create a company that processes food, there's got to be some reward for doing that, especially if they're having to put their own money into it. Risk and reward is, those things have to balance each other in business. People have to decide for themselves what it is that motivates them. I can't tell you that. Okay, thank you.